joining us, a doctor. And as we get close to the NFL draft, obviously the Broncos don't have a first round pick. They don't have a second round pick. They don't pick until the third round. So the evaluation process for players, everyone goes to the physical things. In fact, that's what the combine, for example, is for. But now when you're getting into those later rounds and a lot of the players that you're looking at their performance, their statistics, they're similar. You have to find a way to separate which guys are going to make that transition to the league and perhaps even improve as opposed to, say, they peaked in college. And the mindset behind that is kind of what you're really an expert at. So if you're the Denver Broncos, you're looking to separate out these third round and beyond selections, what's the first thing you do when you look at personnel trying to figure out what makes them tick?
Great question. First of all, thanks for having me on, Sandy and Sean.
It's great to see you in studio again.
It's great to be here.
It's been quite a few years at various venues since we've been able to talk to you face-to-face.
It has. It's been virtual, but now it's face-to-face, and it's beautiful. It's quantitative. So, you know, Sean, what I do is this. An easy way to understand this is there's a quantitative assessment, and that's also measurables. Height, vertical jump, 40 time, things like that. Then we have what's called qualitative assessment. That's the human experience. That's things like confidence, the psychological, the emotional aspect to people. And that's where a lot of teams miss. They're not as astute in the qualitative evaluation of players. Every team is very good at the quantitative. They've perfected that, you know, at the combine. And, you know, the thing that really surprises me is when you know, television covers the combine. They cover the quantitative ad nauseum all day. They don't even talk about the qualitative. Every night from 6 to 11 p.m. is the qualitative experience. You know, they have rooms down there in that little old train station. And so what they do is they have 15-minute increments, and each player goes to one team that they is invited, and they spend 15 minutes. Then they get a five-minute break. They go to the next team. But it's all qualitative. It's measuring personality, emotionality, psychology. Because as you guys know, you can draft a player from Alabama, from LSU, any one of these top schools. I better not leave out Ohio State. All of those top teams, and you don't, and you know the height, the weight, the speed, the athleticism, the change of direction, all of that, but you don't know their emotionality, their psychology. Now, where we come in is we administer personality assessments. And those personality assessments will give us a clearer picture into the psychology, into the emotionality of a player, but it still doesn't give us the whole picture. Here's the missing link. Each psychologist has a different style at the way to deliver that content to a team. So, for example, as you mentioned, I was the Broncos psychologist. I've been the Miami Dolphins, Cleveland Browns. I could go on and on. Every head coach asks me different questions, and depending on their questions will really evoke different answers from me. So it depends on the team, Sean, and what they're looking for. But I can tell you this, and you guys know, being here in Denver, Colorado, Denver hasn't done a really good job at assessing the qualitative aspects of their draft choices, especially at the quarterback position. And to me, when they acquired Russell Wilson, that was their way of kind of raising the white flag and saying, you know what, we're not even going to draft players anymore. I'm going to get one through free agency, and it appears that they've maybe have missed again. But to answer your question, the long-winded answer is personality assessments gives us a clear picture at the qualitative aspects to every player. Because I can tell you this, when a player decides to work hard, when a player decides to hit you on as an outside linebacker, to put his nose in you, when a player decides to run their route full speed, that doesn't start in their hamstrings. It doesn't start in their chest muscles. It starts in the brain. And so if you don't have the neck up right, you'll never have the neck down 100%.
From overall pick 67 through 195, as things stand now, the Broncos make five selections.
Yep.
After 195, they're done. They don't have any of the first 66 picks. Is it even more important if you're looking for a diamond, or maybe in the Broncos' case, several diamonds in the rough?
Yep.
To put particular emphasis on the qualitative/psychological aspect when you're drafting exclusively in that area?
You're 100%, because in the quantitative, it's easy to say, oh, this kid runs a 4.28. You know, he's got 3% body fat. His vertical jump is 46. You know, it's easy to evaluate that. The kid that you want on your football team is the kid that runs a 4.78. He may be a little bit small. He may be a little bit in his, you know, not as proficient in his quantitative, the measurables. But the qualitative, you see something different in the kid. You see a work ethic. You talk to his high school coach, his college coach, and they said this kid was different. His work ethic, he'd get up at 5 in the morning, he'd go to the gym, he'd go to school, then he'd go to football practice. He'd come home, do his homework, and, you know, 11 o'clock at night, we hear grunting in his room, and he's in there doing push-ups. The kid never, you know, his motor is on full speed the whole time. So those later picks, the qualitative evaluation becomes paramount, Sandy. If you don't understand the qualitative side of players, you will not draft well. But more importantly, you won't understand how to develop players, because sometimes you will say, I'll take this kid in the sixth round. You know, he doesn't have all the measurables per se, but we love his qualitative aspect and we're willing to develop him so in his second, third, and fourth year, he becomes an NFL type player.
So when we talk about the idea, when you're trying to get with these players, and we're talking with Dr. Rick Prea, by the way, think14u.org for the number, it gets distilled into things like you talked about, the want to, right? You know, people say, oh, well, does he have the want? Does he have this desire? And trying to gauge that, it seems like a twofold challenge. I mean, obviously, if you're one of the few players, 260-something players that are getting drafted across the country, you had the want to get to a very high level. But what happens on when they run into that next level? If we've seen a lot of players, there's a barrier there.
Right.
You may have been a star player the whole time, but when you get to the NFL level, everyone was that guy.
Right.
You know, everyone was the big man on campus. So how do you try to find a way to sift through the guys that can handle that adversity? And maybe, you know, you take that initial shock and you take a step back, but then continue to go forward, because identifying that seems to be the key. If the athleticism is there, is that interview based? Is that interviewing coaches, friends, family? I mean, how do you do that in the best way so you can find someone who you know will be able to continue to grind through a season, a career, through adverse situations that the likes of which they will probably have never faced before?
Right. Well, it's twofold. One, it is observational. So like I was talking to Ron Rivera recently, and I said, I can look at your quarterbacks in the eye and I can tell you if they believe in themselves. Now he might say, oh, that's voodoo, but it's not. We have indicators that tell us when people are strengthened and they're convicted in their belief systems, how they look, how they don't look at you, the way they speak. All of these signs give us qualitative information about somebody. There's one personality assessment that measures what we call conscientiousness, and conscientiousness is the motor. And if you have it at a covert level, now covert behavior, C-O-V-E-R-T, if you think of CO, think of covered, thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. I can't see those. I'm looking at you right now, Sean, but I can't see your covert behavior.
All right, my poker face still works.
overt behavior, O-V-E-R-T, think of O, open. I can see that. That's anger control, anger management. I can see that behavior. The covert behavior is the conscientiousness. And we can measure that. We can measure their motor, and it's at a covert level. It's not how they can fake it. Any player can work hard. Any player can work hard when it's time for a coach to watch him, when it's, you know, they're at a pro day, at the combine. But it's what you do when no one's watching. That's the covert behavior we're measuring. And in conscientiousness, we can measure that and get a high validity, high reliability score that will tell us, is this a kid with a motor? Is this a kid that doesn't need a carrot in front of him? Because that's what happens, Sean. Let me give you an example. Let's say a kid, I'll use Alabama because I know a lot about that program. We got a kid at Alabama and he plays well. He's all SEC, maybe all American. You know, he gets drafted in the first 2-3 rounds. Well, at Alabama, he dominated. He dominated physically. And he never, you know, you're going to get hit in the mouth in the SEC. I understand that. But when you get to the NFL, offensive tackles can run, okay?
Right.
Yeah, people think, oh, this guy's 330. You know, Laremy Tunsil, who was our starting offensive left tackle for the Miami Dolphins, you met him, Sandy.
I did.
You know, kid's 6'6", 320, and ran a high 4.6. He can throw a football. I've seen it with my own eyes. He can throw a football 95 yards in the air. He can dunk. He's an athlete. He's an amazing athlete. When he played in the SEC, he dominated. Well, he gets the NFL. Now he's got guys that are going to hit him in the mouth, play after play after play. Now your psychology comes into play. It's not so much your change of direction, your arm length, your extension, your quickness. Now you're getting hit in the mouth every play. Then now your psychology goes, oh, man, this dude is just as big as me, just as quick as me, maybe even got a little more nasty. So now your psychology really plays a role, and that's why you see so many players who perform at a high level, at the college level, but they get to the NFL and they don't perform. So that conscientiousness is a measurement that will give us a really accurate indicator if the kid has got a motor at the covert level.
Now, that's it's interesting you brought up Laremy Tunsil, of course, because you know we know that he would have been drafted almost certainly significantly higher than he was, but you had the pre-draft video with the marijuana situation that knocked him down. So how does a team, because these things will run into it, right? How does a team then try to figure out what you look past and what you don't look past when trying to decide if you're going to take a bet on a player?
Yeah, it boils down to the value systems and the belief systems of the GM, the EVP, executive vice president, and your head coach.
So some of this is organizational. You're just willing to roll the dice a little bit.
100%. You know, from team to team, it's the organizational's beliefs and value systems that play a role. There's some teams that say, you know, just because that kid, you know, smokes weed, or just because he got in trouble a few times in college with girls, whatever, he's still a football player to us. In fact, he's got a little bit of nasty to him. He's got a little streak to him. They kind of like that player, depending on the position. And if we're talking about a linebacker, a defensive end, yeah, we like that. If we're talking about a quarterback, maybe we evaluate it a little bit differently. But every team's belief and value systems really infiltrate how people draft. I mean, I've been in draft rooms before, Sean, where it's scientific. I mean, it is. It's really, there's a lot of analysis. There's a lot of quantitative and qualitative analysis. And I've been in draft rooms where they're just like, well, I like this kid. He runs well. He's an athlete. He's great. And then you see a bunch of talking heads around the room getting sore necks because all they're doing is agreeing with them. And you say, let's pick him. And so they pick him. So depending on the team, it's relying upon their beliefs and value systems.
What did you think on this subject of Jalen Carter, who's had some problems in his life?
Yep.
Very talented. Coming out of Georgia, saying I'll only talk or deal with teams drafting in the top 10 when he may not be a top 10 pick.
Right, right. Well, you know, a kid like that, I mean, what is he, 21, 22 years old? That's probably more directive of his agent than him. And I always remember that, you know, these young kids have a lot of management, a lot of people on their teams. They're not always making decisions that are wise to them. A lot of times it's his agent. You know, I think the reality is that's a poor decision because, I mean, there's nothing to hide, whether you're getting picked first overall or 21st overall. You know, a lot of my clients are first-round draft choices, and they talk about leading up to the draft and their, you know, their comportment, their behavior. And I got to tell you, the more open you are, the more teams are going to be receptive to what you do. When you put that, you know, draw that line in the sand, I'm only going to talk to the top 10 teams, I'm only going to talk to these teams. There's only a few players that have ever been able to do that in the history. One's been here in Denver, if you remember, 1983.
Yeah, exactly.
But I seem to remember how
to remember that guy. Yeah.
I think his contract just ran up today, too. Yeah. Right. We're talking with Rick Bray of think14u.org about the way the teams approach the draft process, how they go together and assemble this for the NFL. But we'll come back to this because this is an interesting discussion here. Our call and text line is 303-831. Okay. Pardon me real quick.
1340.
Thank you, Danny. My brain. And in the meantime, we'll take the break to find out what that means about my covert or overt personality next on Mile High Sports.
C-97.
Sandy Clough and Sean Trotar. Weekdays at 2 on Mile High Sports.